Hello and welcome to Fusion, a show for Relay FM members where I talk to hosts from various shows about a single topic. My name is Stephen Hackett, and this month I'm joined by Austin Evans of The Test Drivers and Quinn Nelson of Flashback to talk about, what else, WWDC 2020. Austin, how are you?
Good. I feel like I'm crashing an episode of Flashback right now. I like it.
Yeah. We're going to be covering WWDC 1996 today. So we got some news about PowerPC, and Copeland's coming real soon. So be excited about that. You know, beige everywhere.
Get some quick take action. I feel like that really feels like the future of Apple cameras right now.
I think so. It's you know, a very high quality, and you can pretty much put it in your pocket as long as you're... Well, it's 1996. Everyone's wearing like JNCOs and vests, so you got plenty of pockets. It's good.
I'm out here for it.
Do either of you remember 1996?
No.
Yes.
I was three.
I was also three. I just know that that was the year that my brother was born, and that was like my earliest memory. So technically, I do remember 1996.
Wow, Austin has a better memory than I. I don't remember anything until like 2007 when I was 15.
You might want to get that checked out.
By the way, I do have a quick take, and you can stick it inside of some mid-2000s cargo shorts. I know because I did it.
Last week.
Yeah, my modern shorts, I don't know that they'd fit, but anyway.
All right, so we're going to get into WWDC. Look, we have like half an hour. There's a lot of stuff. But I want to talk to the two of you in particular because y'all spend a lot of time both in the Apple ecosystem but in ecosystems outside of Apple as well. And I kind of wanted to get your input, especially, and I think we'll do this first, the iOS 14 bringing a lot of features that we may have seen on other platforms before, things like widgets and the app library. Quinn, what strikes you the hardest about iOS 14?
It's those two additions, honestly. I mean, I did a video a couple weeks ago about the first iPhone versus the first Android phone. And Android had widgets and an app drawer from day one. There were a lot of things that Android did very poorly from day one and for many, many years. But I think those two things were excellent from the first day, and they were strange omissions in kind of the iOS side of things. I think it's a natural evolution. Springboard largely hasn't changed since the iPhone came out. And I'm actually running the beta, and I really like it. I'm even using the stock widgets, which I didn't think I would be doing. And the app drawer is fantastic because I had accidentally restored my phone. All these folders that I had carefully kind of put together got strewn about because long backup, jailbreaking, messing everything up. Anyway, long story short, I had all these terrible, terrible home screens filled with like unorganized apps. And now they all fit inside of a handy little automatically categorized page. And I think it works really well.
How do you find the automatic categorization? You said you had a bunch of folders before. That's how I am. I've got a ton of folders.
Yeah.
All right. Has it been hard to give that up?
No, because you don't have to. If you want to create your own folders or have pages of custom made folders, you can still do that. I do take issue with the folders that are automatically created. For those that don't know, it kind of just throws all of the apps into those weird generic categories that the App Store kind of defines thing as. And so some of the, like reference, for example, like there's all sorts of weird crap in the reference folder. There's, you know, reading apps, there are utility apps, there's a bunch of stuff that just seems like it shouldn't really be in there. And at this point in time in beta one, you can actually change that. Everything goes into its specific category, and that isn't... You can't create custom folders. You can't create custom landing areas. Like where stuff is where stuff is. You can't even reorganize even your hotkey apps inside of the... I have to imagine that'll change. But right now, there's basically no customization, which I don't really love. And if you have custom folders, you're still going to want to keep them on kind of a home screen folder.
What about you, Austin?
So unlike the mad lad Quinn himself, I actually have not upgraded to any of the betas yet. So I can only kind of talk about what I've seen on Twitter. Look, to me, it doesn't seem like it's the world's biggest upgrade, but also I'm not really surprised, right? I mean, if you look at what's happening in like 13.5, for example, it's clear that a lot of the development resources were maybe transitioned over. Obviously, the Mac side, I'm sure, is a huge sort of task, but also just it seems like a lot of things are focused more on current events and sort of getting that out the door versus making iOS 14 the biggest, most feature-rich update update in the world. But I'm kind of okay with that. I mean, I feel like obviously at this point, Android and iOS are incredibly feature-rich, dare I say nearly complete operating systems at this point. There's not a lot of huge missing features that are really easy to take care of. It's a lot of minor things. And I very much think that when you look at things like the Springboard, like Quinn was saying, it seems so old right now, right? I mean, just so little has changed. And it really feels like a no-brainer, especially because there was already widget support in iOS for quite some time. Now it's just sort of a little bit more flexible and obviously much more front and center that everyone can take advantage of it.
There's one interesting thing about those widgets, I'm sure, Quinn, you've noticed, is that they're not fully interactive like the widgets we have now in iOS 13 and lower. So yeah. If you had
or
a widget
widgets
that,
on Android.
Had widgets with buttons or check marks or something, that doesn't work in the new system. And I think that's a bit of a downgrade, honestly.
I do, too. I think it's bad because presumably, you know, the widgets that existed before, those are no longer going to be there. I mean, maybe not. They're technically there. The widgets that I have on third-party apps still show up in the old area where widgets used to be in Notification Center. But you can't really put them on the home screen. And the ones that you can put on the home screen, you can show interactive content. So, for example, the news app will kind of show you a timeline of news stories. And if you touch a news story, then it opens the news story in the app. But you couldn't, for example, have, and it's one of the reasons why I don't think there's a stock app. There's no stock calculator widget. And that's because you can't actually interact with a widget without entering the app itself.
I see. That's one thing that I'm a little bit disappointed by. So the way I have my Z Flip set up is essentially page 2 is my widget page, right? So I have my Todoist where I have all of my things. So it's really easy just to tap things as I take care of them. And then I have my calendar right below it where I can easily sort of see what's going on. I really appreciate that level of interactivity. And if that's not something I can get on the widgets on iOS, then I might not even bother using them in the first place.
It does make sense, I guess, from a battery standpoint. You don't want apps continually fetching information in the background because that consumes power and it also consumes data. And so I understand why they're going with this more timeline. You can show data if you kind of queue it in advance, but you can't really consistently just be available to the end user. But it does greatly diminish the usability and the utility of the specific widget. So it's a bit of a bummer. I have my calendar widget there. And I have my weather widget there. And those are the only two that I would really use on Android anyway. And so it seems okay. But there are widgets like pCalc, for example, that I would love because I frequently need a calculator. I don't like the stock calculator app. And to have something there on the home screen would be great. But that's not going to be an option.
Yeah, behind the scenes, these widgets are built in a very similar fashion as Apple Watch complications. And so those, you know, they can push updated information. So if your calendar gets a change, it will eventually update. But those lack the interactivity as well. I have to imagine this could be something that happens in a future release, not in the beta cycle, but, you know, next year or the year after, because I think people are going to want that. And you know, the iPhone hardware is only getting better. So maybe at some point they feel like they could make that trade-off.
I mean, if the original Android phones could do it, I feel like we're a little past time on the iOS side of things.
I also wanted to talk to each of you about Apple's transition to its own processors in the Mac. This has been rumored forever, and it's going to be coming by the end of the year. The first models they've announced is going to be a 2-year transition. We don't know exactly what that means. My assumption is it means that in 2 years, or once the timeline starts, 2 years later, there'll be no Intel Macs for sale, but they will continue to support Intel Macs for, quote, years to come, which as the owner of a new Mac Pro, I'm very interested in what that means. But let's start with you, Austin. What do you think this could mean for the PC side of the industry?
Well, it's really interesting because the ARM transition is not a new one, right? I mean, Windows RT shipped with the very first Microsoft Surface back in, oh, was it like 2012 or something? Like, this is something that a lot of people have been really considering because obviously x86 is great, but it's old at this point, right? And Arm has been sort of steadily gaining so quickly over the last decade, decade and a half, that it really makes sense that we're going to reach some kind of convergence. So when you look at the Windows side of the house right now, there is now Windows 10 for Arm, and it is much, much better than the original Windows RT that shipped almost a decade ago at this point. So you do have, similar to what Apple are working on with Rosetta 2, you do have compatibility for legacy apps, the standard stuff that you would expect that has not been compiled specifically for Windows on ARM. The problem is that it doesn't work particularly well. So if I remember right, 64-bit support is something that they've talked about, but it's really only 32-bit apps that are currently working. And the performance is fine, but it is certainly, you're not going to be fooled that you're running native apps right now. And specifically on the Windows side, it's been a real struggle to get a lot of app developers to really get on board, because obviously, yes, there are more and more of these Windows on ARM devices coming out, but it really hasn't been a major focus. It's been sort of like trickles here, trickles there, but really Intel and increasingly AMD have a real stranglehold on the Windows side of the fence. So it just doesn't make sense for a lot of developers to pour a ton of resources into porting things over to ARM. However, when you look at the Mac side, I think it's a little bit different, because essentially, I mean, if you're Adobe, you want Photoshop to run on the Mac. That's a pretty important thing. So it's not a thing of like, oh, well, maybe we'll make it work in a few years. It's like, oh, no, we have a deadline. If these Macs don't support it in 6 months or a year, 2 years, then we're losing a huge amount of our customers, right? Like, it's a very clear transition, which I think is going to help accelerate the ARM transition for everyone, because as you sort of give more of that incentive, and ultimately, as sort of Apple will be using their Apple Silicon as like a real advantage. They'll be like, look at this. We're so much more powerful. We have so much better battery life. We have, you know, LTE or 5G built in, or all these different things that they're able to take from the iOS side of the camp and bring it over. I think it's really going to push everyone to be a little bit more competitive. And specifically on the Windows side, I feel like it's going to give a real incentive to say, hey, look, you know what? We need to take this more seriously. We need to really try to push forward, because we can't just sit here and use the 45th revision of this new Intel chip, which is, you know, originally from 2015. Like, there's really a lot more incentive to push things forward.
Do you think there's a future where a major PC OEM would move to ARM?
Absolutely. Well, I mean, so I don't know if there's ever going to be a day in which Microsoft shuts off, you know, the x86 side and just, hey, you know what, we're going to do an Apple-style transition to ARM. I just cannot possibly see that happening for as long as Intel is the giant that they are. I do think that we're seeing more and more companies sort of interested in experimenting. But the thing is, when you look at the PC side, it is so entrenched. Like, Intel is such a dominant player, right? They have so much sort of sway with the various OEMs that it's difficult to be able to say, you know what, we're going to step back, right? Apple has the vertical integration. They're making these chips. They've spent a decade or more to sort of develop this chip team and really get it to a place where they can really consider replacing Intel, right? No other maker besides maybe Samsung really have that level of vertical integration. And even Samsung don't necessarily ship their chips that they make in all of their devices, right? Like, here in North America, it is very common to see Qualcomm Snapdragon as opposed to Samsung Exynos processors in a lot of their phones, right? So if Samsung can't even ship their own processors and their own phones, I think it's pretty unlikely to see any major PC manufacturer make a full switch over to ARM, short of Qualcomm completely blowing everyone away and Intel really falling hard on their face. But as far as I'm concerned, I don't see that huge shift happening anytime soon. I feel like it's going to be a slow transition. You'll see a little bit of a benefit here, a little bit of a benefit there, but I don't think we're going to see the same kind of huge Apple upheaval of the entire market anytime soon on the Windows side.
Quinn, you're a big Hackintosh enthusiast. What does it mean for that scene?
Well, it means it's dead, basically.
Yeah,
there are theories from some people that they'll be able to get something working, but I just don't really see that ever happening, because it's a completely different architecture and instruction set. And while in theory, I suppose it's possible, just as Apple has made x86 apps kind of serviceable on ARM, I don't think it's ever going to happen, especially because Apple's own silicon is going to be in-house and custom and presumably pretty secretive in its design and layout. And so, yeah, the Hackintosh is dead, as is the real Intel Mac. The good thing is the Intel Mac is not technically dead yet. We still have the 2 years until presumably Apple discontinues sale of Intel Macs. And then Apple has a pretty good track record of continuing to support Macs for years and years and years, even after the PowerPC to Intel transition, which was really quick. Apple continued to provide, was it 2 years of additional OS updates to Intel Macs? It wasn't until Snow Leopard that PowerPC was dropped entirely and it changed into kind of a legacy platform. So I think we're still at least 4 years out, probably with modern Apple and how slowly they move, a little bit more before the Intel Mac is totally dead. And the Intel Mac just so happens to die at the same time as the Hackintosh. So you've still got time to go out, build a Hackintosh, get at least 4 or 5 more years of fun out of it. But yeah, the tombstone has been ordered and the days are numbered, I should say.
That timeline definitely is going to be interesting to follow.
True.
One thing to consider is there's a lot more Intel Macs than there ever were PowerPC Macs, right? The install base is way bigger and they've got to make sure all those customers are cared for. And machines, like, you know, you buy a MacBook Air today, you can get 5 or 6 years out of it pretty reasonably. And a lot of people push machines that long.
I'm going to be really curious to see what happens to the resale value of Intel Macs, right? Because obviously it sort of seems like it's a bit of a dead platform walking. So obviously Macs are, you know, notorious for their incredibly high resale value. But if you go and try to buy a PowerPC Mac today, I mean, sure, there's a little bit of a novelty. And I mean, I'm sure, Quinn, you've bought a few of them for videos. I feel like actually you guys are probably the wrong people I'm talking to because you probably both have more PowerPC Macs than I have Intel Macs in my life. But I'm curious to see how that transition affects things because I don't know how clear it will be to consumers that this is something that's really new. I mean, most people, they buy a MacBook Air and it's just, oh yeah, it's a MacBook. They don't really think about what's inside and how long the software support and everything. It's just like, oh, it's a little bit faster this year. Okay, cool. Oh, it has like, you know, a new screen or whatever. I don't know how seriously people are going to take the transition. When it's me, I'm like, I don't think it's a good time to buy a new Mac right now. I would be really questionable about any brand new Intel Mac. Maybe like a used one or something off the refurbished store, but it's kind of tough for me to wrap my head around buying a new Mac, especially considering that they're still going to be bringing out some new Intel Macs. It sounds like over the next year or so, potentially that new iMac or something.
That's personally why I don't think that this Apple Silicon branding is going to hold up. I think it's a placeholder until we get the actual new Macs in the fall and the winter. I mean, you even heard Craig Federighi on Marques Brownlee's Waveform podcast said, basically, you know, Marques said, is there like a better name than Apple Silicon, one that's shorter that we can refer to? And Craig said, well, I don't really have anything to say right now, and there's no internal names we can talk about, but, you know, kind of stay tuned. Basically saying like, this is a placeholder. We know that that's kind of not the greatest name in the world, and we're coming to it because I agree with Austin in the sense that if they just call it the MacBook Air with the Apple Silicon, you know, A15 or whatever they call it, I don't think normal people are going to know that there's a difference at all and care about it in the real world. And so their marketing is going to have to get pretty clever to let people know, okay, well, what are these newfangled Macs that use this Apple Silicon that I don't really know or care about? What does that do for me? And so I think there's going to be more headlining features in the fall that make the new Macs stand out beyond a new architecture and a chipset, whether that be a drastic visual redesign or the addition of touchscreens or something that makes it to the normal end user a, wow, I need to go out and buy this, because I don't really think that there will be for most people. And in kind of speaking to that, I don't think the resale value of Intel Macs will be hurt that much unless there's a change like that, just because normal people don't know and they don't care.
Yeah, I do think that touch is something that's in the cards. I mean, I think if you look at the way Big Sur looks and operates and the fact that these new ARM Macs, and I agree with you, there needs to be a better name than Apple Silicon Macs because that's just a nightmare to say.
Yeah.
Those machines will run iPhone and iPad apps out of the box, and it will be pretty weird, I think, if like it looks like iOS, even though it's not, it's still the Mac, but it runs these apps, but they're not touch. Like, it really feels like touch is coming to me.
Right. And I mean, you look at this. So we take a look at Catalyst apps that were introduced with Catalina. A lot of them were really poor. they were quick ports. They didn't run that well. They felt awkward. They were clearly iPad apps that had been smashed to work on the Mac. And there was this, I think, negative association with Catalyst as a whole. And Apple has worked really, really hard over the last year to dispel the misinformation that Catalyst means bad, awkward iPad app on a Mac. I mean, you look at the newest Maps app and the newest Messages app on Big Sur, and they are both Catalyst apps, and they feel fantastic, just like a desktop app. All that work seems confusing to me if they're just going to say, oh, hey, by the way, all these awkward iPhone and iPad apps, yeah, we'll just throw them on the screen, and they don't really work because there's no multi-touch, and yeah, good luck playing games. They're on the store because we said everything's coming, but it's just going to be kind of a mess. Like, that's not Apple. So I think something has to be kind of cooking to make that happen at all. And even if it does, even if touchscreen Macs do come, I still wonder how that experience will be. Clearly not as good as the devices they were intended to be played on. So I'm kind of interested to see what Apple's strategy is here, because everything sounded good to me until they said, yeah, we're bringing iOS apps as is to the Mac by default. And then I started thinking, how are they going to do that and make it elegant?
Well, if you look at the Surface line, they've had touchscreens in pretty much everything since day one, right? And it's not just the tablets, and it's obviously the laptops, but you look at something like the Surface Studio, right? I mean, I think it's like a 27 or 28 inch all-in-one. And obviously they have that incredibly cool hinge, but I mean, they, I think, do a really good job of integrating touch in a way which makes sense, but also you lift the screen up and you don't even have to think about it. I totally agree that they're going to have touch. I mean, it's hard to imagine them not having at least a MacBook or something with touch. But then I look at the other things that they have in their portfolio, right? I mean, what happens to ProMotion, right? I would love to see 120 hertz on Mac displays just become the standard, especially if all of these sort of iPhone and iPad apps are already coming over anyway. It's just sort of being standardized. I'd love to see 4G and 5G standard coming right over from the iPad. There's a lot of these things which I feel like as they move over to the Apple Silicon, it's going to enable them to do some interesting things that are maybe possible on Intel Macs, but are certainly not as easy as when they can completely control everything, including stuff like the display controllers and the modems and everything. Like, when it's all integrated and sort of built along that same sort of iPad vein, I think it's going to really open up a lot of unique things, which are really going to give real selling points to why you buy a Mac versus a Windows PC. Because right now, generally speaking, if you're looking at a Mac versus a PC, they're pretty comparable, right? I mean, yeah, sure, you might have a little bit of an advantage here. You may have something like Touch ID there, but almost all of those things are built on top of the fact that they're running Intel processors. Whereas when they have their own Apple Silicon inside, what kind of craziness do they want to start throwing in? And it's like, oh, of course, it's standard. It just works. There's no real reason to say, oh man, I miss Intel, when in reality, you have everything that you need on the Apple Silicon side of the house.
Okay, I have a question for you too. We all seem to agree the touchscreen Macs in some way or another are coming. What form factor do you envision them to be released in? How does that work? And how do they do it in a sense that it doesn't infringe on the iPad's territory of running iPad apps natively on a small and thin touchscreen, touch-first device?
I mean, I think the second part of the question is harder than the first. Like, I don't know where the line's going to be between the iPad and the Mac, but the Mac does retain its app kit history, right? It has all the pro apps. Those aren't on the iPad as of yet. So I think there is still room for the Mac. As far as how they do it, honestly, I don't think they're going to make any ridiculous hardware shifts. Like, I think the MacBook Air with ARM and touch is going to look pretty much the way the MacBook Air looks today. You know, Apple doesn't really redesign machines through transitions or you know, very rarely do they. And I think that where the designs are, like, yeah, they're a little bit boring and a little bit clinical. And I kind of wish for some more whimsy in the hardware, but I think they could pretty much just move the notebooks over without anybody really noticing.
I totally agree. I would be surprised if we see a couple of weirder designs of, like, say, the iMac, right? If it sort of is much more inspired by, like, the Pro Display XDR and the iPad Pro and that kind of design language. But I agree, especially on the notebook side of the house. I don't think we're going to see anything crazy. I mean, I could be totally wrong. I mean, I don't know if any of us expected Big Sur to have the design changes that it did. So if they have, you know, kind of kept this well hidden and they have a lot of really interesting new hardware, I mean, I wouldn't be completely amazed, but I imagine that with fairly small changes, they could just sort of swap out a lot of the Intel stuff, drop in the Apple Silicon. I mean, there are certainly some questions revolving around, like, what happens to Thunderbolt? Are we using USB 4 instead? You know, how does the actual design look as far as, are they making these things slightly thinner? Are they going to take advantage of that same level of cooling and just kind of crank the Apple Silicon chips up into a higher level TDP? I don't know, but I don't expect anything radical, that's for sure.
My only worry is the clear distinction and separation that Apple has famously had between product lines. Because if you look at something like the iPad Pro, that was always, and still remains today, a touch-first device. Its limitations, which may frustrate a lot of iPad users, I think are intentional because they don't want the iPad to infringe on the Mac. Now, things may change. They might introduce that the Apple Silicon version of Final Cut Pro that they've been working on for the last couple of years that will come out on the Mac will also be released on the iPad Pro. But it seems to me that they're intending to keep these two platforms separate, and they've specifically stated before that they don't want them to merge. But my concern is that the iPad has since gotten cursor input, and it works. It's fine. But there's a lot of instances in which I think, man, this could maybe be implemented a little bit better. It's clearly still a touch-first OS that has some cursor support kind of slapped in. And it's better than nothing. It's better than no cursor support, but it's not perfect. And now we have the Mac that presumably is going to get touch support because it needs to run all of these iOS and iPad apps. But it's still going to be a cursor-first operating system where, you know, the implementation is, sure, yeah, I mean, you can run iPad apps. You definitely, it's not as good as an iPad. You're still going to want one of those. But if you need to, I guess you can. And the question becomes, are they diluting the best features of their distinct OSs into two kind of, we're trying to do more than we're really designed to do well operating systems, you know?
To me, it's hard to imagine. Maybe not now, maybe not in the next couple years, but it's hard to imagine the iPad and the Mac not merging in some significant way in the future. It just seems like they're both on sort of like the same trajectory. They're both headed to the same place. Yeah. And it's hard for me to think about, like, why would they not do it, right? Like, what's the point of having two very similar operating systems that aren't eventually merged, right? I mean, you look at what I use the iPad Pro every day as a laptop, right? I totally agree that it is a touch-first device, but I use the trackpad much more than I use the touchscreen. I really use it as like, I really appreciate this as something that I can get sort of quote-unquote real work done on in a way which makes me sort of appreciate the hardware, appreciate the software more than if I was using a MacBook or if I was using a Windows PC. And to me, everything Apple has done over the last couple of years with the transition moving Mac to ARM and obviously integrating a lot of these iPad features and the iPad absorbing a ton of stuff from the Mac and very quickly iterating and bringing a lot of these sort of quote unquote more professional power user features over, we've got to see a transition. It's going to have to merge at least in some way in the future. That might be 5 years from now. That might be 10 years from now. I don't know. But I just can't imagine that they're doing all this work not to have the Mac and iPad OS sort of converge in some way.
It's definitely unprecedented, right? How many other companies have had sort of two OSs that came from the same place, right? iOS came from Mac OS. They've led these separate lives, and now they're slowly coming back together. That's a weird deal.
It is weird.
I just don't know. I have no idea where it's going to go.
Apple OS. They're throwing it all away.
Yeah, what we're saying is that there's an Apple OS that is basically, you go out, you buy a Microsoft Surface laptop. When it's in laptop mode, it runs Mac OS. And then when you take the screen off, it turns into an iPad. Is that what we're asking for?
Sure. Seems easy. Why not?
Real talk. I would love that. But anyway.
Well, I'm glad we solved it. We all now know where the future is going.
You're welcome, Apple.
Real quick, before I let y'all go, are there any other highlights from the week that we didn't get? We kind of touched on the big stuff, but any smaller things that jumped out at you?
Yeah, sure. We didn't talk about Apple TV. I'm just kidding.
4K YouTube. I can watch y'all's videos in 4K. That's on right. Apple TV.
I'm actually ready for that. I'm tired of watching 1080p YouTube. This is horrible.
I have like a 12-year-old 1080 TV, so it doesn't matter to me. But other people, it'll be set.
I'm curious to see what WatchOS 7 brings, right? I mean, obviously we know what it is in theory. And again, I haven't installed the beta, but I'm ready for it to bug me when I don't wash my hands for long enough. I want to wear it while I'm sleeping and let it make me feel bad about getting not enough sleep every night. I mean, these seem great. I'm really excited for my watch to shame me into better behavior.
If there's anyone that needs shaming, Austin, it's you.
Look, man, I'm not going to disagree with that, but I've read your FAQ on your website, so I know how you really feel.
This man knows the truth. Real talk, speaking of Apple TV, what did you guys think about that Foundation trailer? All right, well, you know.
Okay, can I get something off my chest, you guys? It's just the three of us here, right? We're not recording
in no
anymore.
Way thousands and thousands of other people listening.
Perfect. I still have never redeemed my free Apple TV Plus trial.
What? There's some good stuff on there.
Is there, though?
I enjoyed the morning show, and I enjoyed the space show that I can't remember the name of.
For All Mankind.
Yes, For All Mankind.
Yeah, I got 3-4 episodes into that one. It was just a little too slow. I did like the morning show, and then that's it. I tried a couple other pilots on their other shows, and I just couldn't get into them. Foundation looks good. I'm not a science fiction guy at all, but that trailer during the keynote looked good, man.
Agreed.
I'm excited.
I think that might get me to finally redeem my trial. It looks cool. I don't know. It seems like a great way. Like, look, I'm not going to lie. As I was watching WWDC, I was just thinking, did Apple really just create Apple TV Plus so they don't have to license content for their keynotes anymore? They can just plug their Apple TV Plus stuff all keynote long. It's perfect. It's real vertical integration all the way top to bottom.
A good use of billions spent just for their keynotes.
Oh, yeah. Never mind. This is a bad idea. Bad idea.
I have a question about this redemption now that we're on the subject. Is it a year from the date of redemption or a year from the date of purchase of the machine that you're redeeming the 1 year on?
Purchase, I believe. I mean, I can. It bugs me. It bugs me even
probably,
in the settings.
You're probably out of time. You blew it. You're going to have to start paying $5
soon.
A month.
Expiring soon. Free year of Apple TV Plus. Top of my settings. If I tap it,
wow.
Start free trial or decline.
Start it. Start it now.
Do it, Austin.
All right. I'll start the free trial right now. Oh, it's asking
I know
for
you're
my...
a man that likes to save $5 a month, so I think you should do it.
It's literally done. Yep. Okay. It was like, oh, is it with new iPad? Interesting. Okay. I've now successfully signed up for my year free trial of Apple TV Plus. They will charge me $4.99 a month in June 26, 2021.
Wow. There you go. It is a true year. Watch the morning show, Austin. It's good.
I will forget that I ever said yes to this, and I will remember it in a year. So
put it in your task manager that Mike set you up with.
Yeah. How's that going?
It's going great.
Really?
How dare you? Yeah, dude, I love Todoist, man. Oh, I am good. Absolutely living inside it. I'll put it on. Okay, remind me June 25th, cancel Apple TV Plus. Okay, got it. Done deal.
All right, well, thank you both for joining me. Austin, where can people find you on the internet?
Well, first and foremost, of course, at relay.fm/testdrivers for the wonderful podcast that Mike and myself host. Other than that, you can find on YouTube at just youtube.com/AustinEvans and at Austin, not Duncan, on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, all the usual suspects.
And Quinn?
YouTube.com/Duncan33303. YouTube.com/Snazzy and on all the socials at SnazzyQ.
Cool. Well, thank you so much, members. Thank you for supporting Relay FM. And until next month, bye, y'all.